You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. I'm Andrew Wiebe from my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Kalen Carr. What's up, boys? Happy Monday. Beautiful light shining through my window. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling some existential dread, too, because I watched The Social Dilemma last night. And
I have to watch that, don't I?
Oh, you probably should. And then you maybe have to like dig deep inside yourself and be like, am I part of the attention economy? And,
oh, I definitely am.
Yeah, for sure.
Literally how I make my money.
I watched the trailer
part
for
of
it.
The problem.
I watched the trailer for that and was like, I'm definitely a part of this issue. I should probably watch this. And then went and binged something I've already watched 500 times. So I didn't have to think about it. And I was like, this is probably what that show's about. But we have to add Happy New Year. L'Shana Tova to everyone.
Yes.
It is in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So we're all supposed to be atoning for all of our sins. And I thought, do any of you have any MLS sins that you want to atone for?
Oh,
wow.
How many? You know, I kind of feel like I've already admitted them all. This is like my confessional, right? So I get in here and I assume once I say them to you guys, I'm scot-free, baby. I don't got to pay for those later on.
Well,
I'm
in good. Judaism, we only get once a year. We can't do it whenever we want. And the book is sealed next Monday night. So you have the rest of this week to really get them through. Obviously, as Extra Time as a show, we atone for the sin of questioning Adrian Heath. Duh. We refuse to talk about him for the next year. Yeah, that's all I had.
I think my original sin was the Wando take.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Which you were forced into, right? Because like I made you have a wild guarantee.
Sure. But if you look a bear trap in the eye and then you're like, why not stick your foot in it? You really only have yourself to blame. Kalen, you've been awfully quiet. I assume that you are examining your soul for any imperfections.
Yeah, I was looking deep. I already had to atone once for my sins talking poorly about San Jose this year. That seems like maybe someone should apologize to me.
Maybe Mateus Almeida, but he won't right now. He's got a really bad headache. So we'll wait and see how that works out for him. There's a big weekend to talk about in Major League Soccer. A weird weekend. Penalty fights for the Fire and, of course, an L for them, too. I mentioned the aforementioned Mateus Almeida headache. He did not come to the press conference after a 6-1 loss to the Timbers. A lot of questions about what San Jose is doing right now. Peter Vermes is ranting about antics on the field and FC Dallas fans feel a certain kind of way. So does Sporting Kansas City. But I mean, the story of this weekend from a soccer perspective, from an MLS perspective, is very clearly the young guys going, doing a job, getting starts, scoring goals, being impactful, whether that's, you know, 50 some U.S. youth national teamers and 8 Canadian national teamers, youth national teamers in MLS, or a laundry list of guys in Europe. And we'll start there.
Hold on a sec. Does Io Akinola count on both?
That's true. He's like he's one. There's one to be counted, but where the percentages go.
So it's 57.5 U.S. youth national teamers and 8.5 Canadian youth national.
St. John's, Newfoundland time zone. It's a half one. Boom.
Right.
Oh, it all comes full circle. No one gets it. I probably got it wrong.
You're so good at Canadian geography.
Yeah. For sure.
Where do we want to start? And why is where we want to start Gio Reyna? I mean, that's got to be it, right? Starts the opener for Borussia Dortmund, scores a goal, draws a PK. I don't think he missed a pass on the night. He has Erling Haaland calling him the American Dream and like doing the like big brother thing where he puts him in a headlock, basically.
Can I just say that's super cheesy from Erling Haaland calling him?
Shocking.
Like, but he's really cheesy.
Yeah. That guy's cheesy.
That guy's a goob. I actually think that the bigger thing is Weston McKennie. And we'll get to Reyna in a second for sure, but there's a handful of, and we had this conversation a couple weeks back. There's like 6 teams in world soccer that are kind of like head and shoulders above. It's, you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona, it's Manchester United in Liverpool, it's Bayern Munich, and it's Juventus. Now, there have been teams that have almost reached that. There are teams like PSG and Man City and maybe Chelsea that are kind of on the way. I think AC Milan was at that level at one time, though they're not anymore. To see any time an American makes an appearance for one of those teams, it feels like you're checking a really big box. But to have Weston McKennie not just make an appearance, but start the first game of the season, play as well as he played in terms of being really controlled and really tidy and seemingly addressing all the issues that we've all seen from him over the last couple of years with Schalke and with the U.S. national team. And to do so after essentially being a $20, $25 million transfer move, this was a big moment for American soccer. This was a big moment for American soccer to see the most successful and historically great team in Serie A make a move for an American like that. And to have it be an American who came through the FC Dallas Academy. Weston McKennie went to the FC Dallas Academy when he was 11 years old. And he spent 7 years there. 8 years there, actually. Like, this is... It was a huge moment. It was a huge moment, and as fans of the league, as fans of the game, we have to take time to appreciate that, because what we all should understand by this point about our place in world soccer is that with all these great young players that we're developing, the goal in the immediate for them is to get better and to help their teams win. But for almost all these guys, the goal in the long term is to move to a club like Bayern Munich, like Real Madrid or Barcelona, Manchester United, Liverpool, or Juventus. And Weston McKennie has done that. It's like validating, which I hate to think of it that way because we shouldn't need validation, but we do. And it's proof that the project of developing our own players, it's the same type of proof that we had last year with Adams and Alphonso Davies. And it feels good because it means the sky is the limit and there's more on the way.
Motion to, like we did with Pity Martinez, the South American Player of the Year, begin calling Weston McKennie FC Dallas Academy product, just to rankle Euro snobs, just to like dig underneath that little exterior.
It does bother them, but like our guy Charlie Boehm has a article on the site where he wrote, you know, he interviewed Weston McKennie and they talked about his academy journey and he talked about how important FC Dallas was to his development as a player. And there's the same thing about Gio Reyna as well. Now, the FC Dallas and NYCFC sure wish that things had gone different and then they'd been able to sign him for a couple of years and play them for a couple of years and get the same type of transfer fee that, you know, Vancouver got for Davies. But they've learned from their mistakes, and that is part of a growing league as well. But whatever happens with these players over the next 10 or 15 years, they got their start in MLS. They got their start in these academies. And these kids who are coming up now, they know that and they see that, and they're trying to take the same path or a very similar path to the highest heights of this game of ours.
I'll repeat what I think I said on the last show and what I think about all the time when it comes to MLS academies, the development pathway, and then selling eventually. And MLS Commissioner Don Garber said in December 2018, we want to be a selling league. It's starting to go that way slowly. MLS needs to be dream makers.
Yeah.
Don't hold that dream back in any way. You need concentration, you need a lot of swings, you need a lot of players in positions to make their dreams come true, and that will fill your pipeline on the back end as well. Weston McKennie, already sort of a darling, it seems, of the Juve fans. The energy, the push forward, the physicality in midfield, and he almost scored 2 goals in this game too. Almost 3 goals, to be honest with you. He had some chances. I mean, this is an incredible moment. I think Gazzetta
Sport called him a growing Juve legend already.
After one game.
In their first game judgment, yeah.
But you love to see Andrea Pirlo, MLS legend Andrea Pirlo, go with his boy, Weston McKennie. They got Roma and Napoli next, so we'll see what happens. But that's a huge, huge moment for Weston McKennie. Gio Reyna, goal, draws PK for Dortmund. They win against the Champions League team last year in Germany. I mean, he is very good, and he's 17 years old. It's incredible sort of the trajectory that he's taken. Tyler Adams, he starts in midfield, defensive midfield for RB Leipzig, looks really good. pretty nondescript game for him, but that's kind of the point. Leipzig dominated this weekend, but he looks like a starter, which he wasn't last year, coming back from injuries. Timothy Weah comes on for, shout out Jonathan David, Canadian international for Lille. It was a 1-1 draw against Marseille, but it's good to see Timothy Weah playing regularly again. Reggie Cannon, who watched this game, Boavista Nacional, a wild, wild, crazy, weird, open, gappy game. Kaylin, you put your hand up. Did you join me in the illegal stream? I mean, on a very legal method of watching this match?
Definitely. I think I was listening in Arabic, actually, but which the style of is actually very similar to Spanish as far as the energy throughout the match.
Yeah, there's a build. There's a build.
Yeah. But anyways, I was just going to say, I mean, you mentioned all these guys, but I think these the success of these young players are compounding for each other. And I think for us who have been around and are maybe a little more old heads, I guess I would count myself in that category now. Based on my men's league status. But just like these guys don't really seem to carry the same like junk that we do. Like they're like, yeah, they're just like, if you're Gio Reyna, you're like, yeah, I saw Christian do this at this club. And then if you're Weston, you're like, well, Christian Pulisic is over at, you know, Chelsea doing it. And so you just see these things kind of, or if you're Tyler Adams, you're like, oh, Alfonso just won Champions League. I want to be the first American to win Champions League. And so you see these guys and I feel like talent has always been there in this country in some ways. It just hasn't maybe gotten the opportunity to play at a young age, and it hasn't gotten the opportunity to play at these big clubs. And also these big clubs have changed as well too, where they are now allowing young players and incentivizing young players. It's a much more welcoming environment, I would imagine, to walk into. And when you actually go to the biggest clubs in Europe, it's a lot easier in some ways as from an environment standpoint than when you go to maybe some of the smaller clubs in a smaller country. I just remember just from my own personal experience being 21 and I got to go trial at Arsenal, and I went there for a week, and it was Dennis Bergkamp and it was Thierry Henry and it was Sigan and Reyes and all these guys. And like you walk in there and everybody is very rich, very famous, very friendly. The staff is amazing, you know, and like they make you look good, and you go around and look, I was an athletic player. I was fit. I understood how to play. I had good movement, and then I just gave the ball away to Bergkamp, and you just move. But he hit the ball. I scored two goals the first day because I didn't even know the ball just landed on my foot, right? And you end up going through it. And look, I was 21. It was too late, but I actually progressed more in 2 weeks there than I had in maybe a year. I felt like somewhere else. And I was like, what if I could have been in this type of environment earlier? And I went to Club Bruges on trial afterwards. And that was a really difficult environment where nobody spoke to me, period. And people were just very unfriendly. It was not a welcoming environment. The manager got fired while I was on trial. I ended up just hopping a train and leaving town after like 5 or 6 days. And it was just, you just see the gulf in what it can be like. And it's not necessarily always a European dream for everybody. And it worked out well for me to come back and do MLS after finishing my college. But you can see what it would be like to get in these environments at a young age in a place where people are understanding and incentivized to play young players. And I just saw that, you know, even from Gio, the trust of his teammates, the way that they react to him, the way they share the ball with him, and the way that he is able to make mistakes. And I even think about that when I watched Brendan Aaronson play last night, where it's like, he didn't really even have an amazing first half. I felt like in some ways he was bothered a little bit by the physicality at times of Wanyama and Piet and some of those guys, but he was allowed to grow through the game and make mistakes. And he's already earned that trust as well. And then he shows his quality in the second half and ends up getting really the game winning assist in this one. But he's gotten so many minutes, so many games at a high level. And I think he's a guy for me that can translate over to Europe. That's the next step for him. Because when I see Gio Reyna doing it, and I know Gio is a really special player and has his own unique qualities, but I see Brendan and I'm like, I think he could play at a high level in Germany too. So I was just reflecting on how it's totally shifted. And for the young players, they're thinking like that. They're not thinking about, oh, I don't belong here, or this hasn't been done before. They're seeing their youth national team teammates or competitors or other homegrowns that have gone on and had success and wanting to do the same.
Let me just interrupt and just say, like, what an incredible flex it is for Kalen to open his discussion, just talking about how Bergkamp gave him a couple of assists.
I also got megged three times by Reyes that first day.
Oh, no, you got megged by a $30 million Spanish international winger. Oh, God, that must be so devastating right after scoring two goals given to you by Dennis Bergkamp. How do you ever recover from that?
Well, I in the reserve league.
Kalen, do you think
humble you real quick.
Kalen, do you think the Club Bruges guys would have been nicer to you if they had known that someday you would be one of the co-hosts on Extra Time Radio?
I mean, I've got some scores to settle. I could
call them out. Yeah. You know, we are big in Belgium.
Yeah,
it doesn't sound
lovely
logical,
country.
We're
by
big
the way,
in Belgium. We're
lovely little town. It was great.
When in Bruges, you know, normally when somebody takes off from Bruges after a couple days, that's like a that's an issue. Tom Farrell. Yeah. Anybody making that connection? No?
The reference from 1999.
Good stuff. Can I just talk about the Reggie Cannon, Boavista thing? And then we'll get to... Because I think the Brendan Aaronson thing is very interesting because it sounds like he could go maybe in the winter, maybe to Red Bull Salzburg, maybe to reunite, or not reunite, but MLS to MLS with Jesse Marsh. But Reggie Cannon, man, I think these games are going to be ones that people want to watch just from an entertainment standpoint. Reggie's going to be on an island a lot for this Boavista side. Like, they were playing against a promoted team, and I don't know if it's just first game, chemistry, don't really understand the timing of the tactics or the press, but they were super, super gappy, like, leaving large channels for Nacional to run into, easy to break through their four-man press, and then it's just two midfielders, and Reggie's basically in positions a lot where a winger receives the ball, he's 15 yards away, and it looks like either he should be already out there or they want him to press that guy, then all of a sudden the ball's in behind him and he's going to be defending running backwards. He was pretty good in build-up. Little nondescript when it came to the attacking side, but Boavista was under pressure a lot, especially in the first half of this game. And I think Reggie's going to have an opportunity, let's say, to really hone his 1v1 defending because it seems like they're going to put him out there a lot. But 3-3, decent result for them. It was away. Their home stadium looks awesome. They play Porto, I believe, on Saturday. So that's another huge test for Reggie Cannon.
The derby for them.
Yeah, it is. It's huge. Here's an email, Gio the new Pipa. Hey, fellas, Luke from Milwaukee. Gio Reyna recently said he wants to play on the national team as the 10 ahead of McKinney and Adams. Thinking of Berhalter as coach, do you think the national team could start playing like Columbus did with Reyna pulling that Pipa Higuain spot? Do we have players to pull that off? And that basically leads me to this, Doyle. We discussed with Steve Zakuani the whole Jordan Morris thing, which I don't want to go back into, but basically whether he belongs on the national team as a starter right now. And I just want to clear the slate. Slate is clean for you. You're imagining what Greg Berhalter might do, but more importantly, you're imagining what you would want to see. What is your quote-unquote starting 11 for the national team right now? Is Gio Reyna in it?
You say right now, you mean like if we had a game tomorrow?
Let's say if we had a World Cup qualifier in November.
So, goalkeeper, I would go Matt Turner over Zach Steffen. I think Matt Turner's just a better goalkeeper. I understand that that's not going to happen. Right back is Cannon. Right center back is Long. Left center back is Brooks. Left back is Dest. McKenney and Adams in deep central midfield. And we didn't really touch on it, but one of the interesting things with Adams over the past couple of games is he's being used in more of that quarterback role for RB Leipzig, which is not something like they've had him drop deep and spray a little bit in the past, but like he's actually being a tempo setter, which is how Greg Berhalter likes to use his number six. So if Adams is playing that way for a Champions League semifinalist, like he could play that way for the U.S. national team. And I think that he and McKenney together make a lot of sense. Because it's November, probably Gio Reyna is going to be the number 10. Though Sebastian Legette has been great for the U.S. national team every time he's played for the U.S. national team, and he has been great recently for the Galaxy, one of the best players in the league. But Reyna is probably a different level. And then I'm assuming Christian Pulisic would be healthy by then. So Christian Pulisic will be the left winger. Josh Sargent, who we didn't even talk about, he would be my center forward. And I know that there's a lot of folks saying that Josie is still the, including on the show, saying that Josie is still the best center forward in the U.S. national team. He doesn't look like it. Josie does not look like the Josie of even last year so far in 2020. And we have to we have to recognize that. So I would go with Sargent or Josie, who has been the MVP of MLS at this point, as the number nine. And then on the right wing, it comes down to either Jordan Morris or Tim Weah. And Tim Weah hasn't gotten back to full fitness yet, but he's played 20 minutes and he has found like four huge chances for that Lille team. And I trust players who find chances like that will eventually put them away. And it's a little weird, right? So using Morris on that right wing is a little bit weird for the U.S. in the way that Berhalter has wanted to play over the last couple of games, because he's had the wingers pinch inside and occupy the half spaces and be playmakers in a lot of traffic, which is not Jordan Morris's forte. It would be Gio Reyna's forte. So ideally, if you had said next March, right, let's say Paxton Pomykal's healthy, I would put Reyna as that pinched in right side winger and Pomykal in the central midfield. But Pomykal hasn't been healthy at all this year. When he has played, he has been one of the very best players in the league. But he can't stay healthy. And we don't know if after his fourth surgery in 4 years, if he's ever going to be the type of player that I think he can be, and that AC Milan, among others, thinks he can be. Because remember, AC Milan was tracking him throughout last year, and there was a push to make a bid for him that fell through once he got injured.
Can I just push back on the Sargent one, just from my own sort of like watching the first half hour of Werder Bremen? And I know that they're basically awful to watch, so it was almost masochistic on my part to even do it, but I wanted to see Josh Sargent. But if he's sort of lost in that for the entirety of this year, it's a future play. I get it. I understand why you would do it. But if you're saying I need to win a World Cup qualifier, how could that be the choice that you make?
So he's scored, I think, 4 goals in his last 5 U.S. national team games. He started 4 of the last 5. And granted, it's levels, right? He's not playing the greatest teams in the world, but I'm assuming this qualifier that we're playing against is not Mexico. But who are we playing, Weeby?
We want our best team. We got a difficult test.
I don't trust Josie to go 90 against anybody. So I'm starting Josh Sargent. I'm considering Jossie because Jossie has been incredible.
If you like Tim Weah and he's playing at center forward, why is he not in that rotation or that conversation?
He can be as well. For sure he is. But I need to see more of that than just 20 minutes. And most of what we've seen of Weah over the years has been either as a right or left winger.
All right, let us know what you think.
Jeremy Abobasi in this list? Is there any other MLS guy?
Yeah, we had a tweet about Abobasi and where he fits in the national.
I mean, I love Abobasi. I don't know if it's not at the point where I'm thinking about starting him in a World Cup qualifier. Not quite yet. Now, he has the same problem, though, that Sargent does. Sargent is starting at left midfield for that Werder team, which is going to be in the 2 Bundesliga next year. Abobasi, he started at center forward this past weekend, and of course he scored. He scores a goal like every 110 minutes when he plays as a center forward, but Gio Savarese tends to prefer to use him as a winger.
Well, they bought a DP and a center forward.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, Chris Richards subbed on for Bayern this weekend. That's huge for him, although his future long-term may not lay with the German champions. Looks like Sergiño Dest is headed to Bayern too, so TBD on that one. We'll follow that one closely. I would love to know out there what you think about the U.S. National Team 11 right now, and also the Canadian National Team 11, because there's a lot of great prospects coming there too. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Let's go to the MLS side. We've spent a lot of time across the pond. Well, on our side of the pond here, here are some numbers from Brian Shiretta. 57.5 U.S. youth national team eligible players and 8.5 Canadian youth national team players eligible playing this weekend in MLS. So that's 66. Don't have to do the halves on that one. Combining for 7 goals, 7 assists over 13 games. Now, that does not have secondary assists. Tudel Rahman, who is a master of Twitter and also provides great information, had 32 U.S. eligible U21 players playing this week in MLS. 4 goals, 9 assists. He did include secondary assists. Were there any performances that stood out to you that you want to talk about? And do we start with Brendan Aaronson? Do we start with Griffin Yao, who had the left-footed finish to get a draw against Toronto FC for DC? Do we go with Kevin Paredes? Do we go down? I mean, there's so many to talk about. Cole Bassett got a goal. Sam Vines, Cole Bassett is now the connection in Colorado. They didn't get to get together for a corny celebration this time, but, you know, distance, too far away, et cetera, et cetera.
Let's talk Cole Bassett.
Okay, let's do it.
Bassett. I think we came on this show a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, and said Colorado was the biggest disappointment. And the biggest change they've made is putting Cole Bassett in as that number 10 position. And I liked what we saw from him in past years. I didn't think this would be the role for him. But what he does is he covers a ton of ground. He's always an option to link up with people. And it lets Jonathan Lewis float inside. Shinashiki, starting at center forward, isn't a natural center forward who's always going to stay central. And so it's brought fluidity to that whole front line. And Cole Bassett's always where he needs to be to allow those guys to move. And you take, on top of that, the finishing. So confident. And he's done it now over the course of the last month in different ways. He scored different types of goals. And so you add that to a game where it looked like he was going to be an 8, maybe even a 6. And now he's played higher up the field, looks comfortable. And this is a club that basically is starting all U21 kids across this team, or all U23 kids when you look from front to back. And he's a major part of them being successful and now moving into the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't have any, like, it has been kind of stunning to see what he has become, because a month ago I would have said, yeah, he finds the right spots, but I don't know what he does beyond that. And it turns out he's finding the right spots at the right times in the box. If you look at his goals, he's become really good at box arriving. Like, he gets those one touch finishes and he uses the space that the rest of the team creates. And they drilled the Galaxy, who had been playing really, really well. And Bassett was a big part of that. Kellen Acosta, who's like playing great soccer again, was a part of that. Jonathan Lewis got another goal. He's a part of that as well. Sam Vines might have been the most impressive one out of all of them, because Sam Vines is often asked to defend on an island, because Lewis, the way Robert Fraser uses Lewis, he has him cheat high. Just stay high, invite Julian Araujo forward, and like, we'll try to hit into that space on the counter. So Vines is asked to do a lot of defensive work. He did that really well, and then he got forward to put that cross in for the game-winning goal. Robin Fraser kept saying over, you know, the end of August, like, I'm seeing stuff that's starting to work. And like, I kind of disagreed with him. And over the past 4 games, it's now hard to disagree. And look, they had to change their identity a little bit. And trading Kai Kamara was a part of that. And now they have in Shinashiki or Rubio, different types of forwards who will drop off the front line and play make a little bit. And then when that happens, that is Cole Bassett's trigger to get forward and suddenly become like a second forward who nobody's actually marking, nobody's actually tracking. And if you look at that goal he scored, he ends up being the third Rapids player in the box, and there's only 2 Galaxy defenders. So it's a brilliant little bit of play. And Bassett's been fun. He's been a huge part of it.
I'd even add to that, there's a play where Shinashiki goes wide, beats his man to the end line. Lewis comes in and Bassett recognizes the play, and he's the furthest forward player to push the center backs. So Lewis has room to come in, and he hit the crossbar on the play. They didn't score, but that's the moments that Bassett's seeing. And all of this also does fit Kellen Acosta. Kellen Acosta wants to come forward and be a late arriving like 10. But when the game's chaotic and they don't have possession, or he doesn't find gaps, he kind of gets lost and he doesn't do enough in possession deeper to make it worthwhile for the team. And he's now fit in perfectly behind Bassett.
We'll talk about Kai Kamara more, but I want to stick here and I want to come to you, Kaylin, on Brendan Aaronson, because this has been bouncing around in my head for basically 2-3 weeks since these rumors dropped. It's a big 4-1 win for the Union against Montreal. Now they have Romel Quioto to thank for a big part of that. Romel scores a goal. Romel throws an elbow. Romel hits the showers early after Doyle reminded us, which I didn't see this, throwing up the scoreboard during the video review of him throwing said elbow and getting sent off for violent conduct. That's karma, man. Come on, Romel. You got to know how that's going to work out. You did it. They've got cameras on you. Maybe don't go scoreboard at that point. But look, a game for Brendan Aaronson where, again, he shows us moments in the final third. And that had been sort of the marching tune to him over the last year or so before this year. Are you going to add those final pieces in the final third? I personally did like three interviews with him, and he knew, and we talked about before the interviews, that that was going to be a question. He was like, I acknowledge it. It's something I have to work on. Well, now it's getting there. He had a nice assist in this match. Shabilko feasting off the service. When you think about where he should go in Europe, as you think about your own experiences and where guys are succeeding, does Red Bull Salzburg seem like a good landing spot? If you're Brendan Aaronson, are you saying, yes, I'm going there, send me there, let's do this?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think the style of play, the way they play, the up-tempo energy, I mean, he's all over he's all over the pitch. He's, you know, very good on pressure. He's able to work in tight spaces. He can change the tempo. He can find the final pass. He's making the right decision. You know, that's something that's difficult that I think was that last step of, do you shoot? Do you square it? He's consistently finding that right choice. So I think that would be a fantastic move for him. And I think being within that sort of global system as well, we've seen how they've been able to use players and move them around and put them in good spots. So I think that style of play would suit him. When I look at the Union overall, I mean, Mark McKenzie also is another name that's been mentioned to go abroad. He should take that Kyoto sort of forearm shiver as a compliment as a center back, because he looked back and was like, man, this guy's all over me right now. You never want to get smacked in the head like that, but he was fantastic in this day. Took an early knock on a sort of an unlucky play. It looked like he may have hurt his knee a bit, and then kind of stays in the match. He has two assists. The one that goes to Brendan Aaronson is a really nice left-footed ball that just curls just perfectly into space and leads Aaronson in onto goal as well. And then Real, also the other homegrown player, had two assists. Beautiful left foot, finds that really nice ball to Shabilko, and was just very confident and calm in possession, as we've become accustomed to seeing from him. So if you look at these young players from the Union, like you said, Kyoto made it a lot easier day for the Union overall. And it felt like right when that happened, they were always bound to come back and find their way. And you should also mention Bedoya too, because he really,
yeah. he didn't shout out Anthony Bangers Only Fontana.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. He's come off the bench now time and time again. I mean, that's a nice problem to have if you're Jim Curtin, where you're like, man, Fontana, should he start? Should he come off the bench here? It's working for him coming off the bench, but you also want to see more from him. So, I would say the Union, as far as young players right now, are still the standout team to watch.
To bring it back to Brendan Aaronson, I think Red Bull Salzburg, if he wants to be in the Bundesliga, which it sounds like that's where he wants to be, is an ideal sort of starting point for him. If you look at their outgoing transfers over the last 5 years or so, whether it's RB Leipzig or other, it's just been big Bundesliga transfer, one after another, after another, and after another, with other clubs mixed in, whether that be, you know, Liverpool last year. You go there, if Jesse Marsh thinks you're good and wants to play you, you do it. But how much do you ask for if you're the Union? Like, what would it take? To me, a big part of this conversation is opportunity cost, and that's for both the player and the club. The opportunity being your player gets seen and maybe also gets you sell on down the road. Like, the earlier you get Brendan Aaronson to Red Bull Salzburg, the earlier he can play and make an impact and maybe make that next move or prove that your system is worth investing in. Like, maybe Mark McKenzie goes 6 months later after Aaronson has torn up the Austrian league, and maybe you get an extra 500K or a million out of that, et cetera. Like, to me, teams have to be willing to make the moves now so that not only does that player have the opportunity cost to play and they're not still back in your system where they've already proved it, but also you can maybe move his younger brother up, or you have another prospect to move up. That's the opportunity cost you have. Those are the minutes that you can give out. So I would sell him this winter. And I'm wondering what you guys think the number would need to be and what's reasonable for Brendan Aaronson, because a lot of things have gotten thrown around.
I think you're looking at, when you look at Reggie Cannon, age, all the other things, I think the hope would be if you can get somewhere in the $3 million range, but have a considerable sell-on fee from there, that's what you want. Because I agree with everything you said. It's a future play. It should be now, both because you think Brendan Aaronson will accumulate more, will be worth more as an asset at Red Bull Salzburg to move from there. And all the players you mentioned, or a lot of the players you mentioned, who have moved to other leagues, they've played against those teams in European competition, and then they've been bought. That's what happened in Minamino. That's where Haaland really blew up. All those things. If you get Aronson there, I think the sell-on fee is as important, because I think you're going to sell Brendan Aronson for lower than maybe you think he's worth to build that reality for Mark McKenzie, to build it for, I don't know, whoever's coming next.
Paxton Aronson.
Jake McLoyne, Dante Huckabee, whoever they think is next along this line. And trust me, they've already signed three homegrowns that trigger on January 1st, 2021. So they're already there thinking about it. I think that's key as well.
And we should mention that they gave Jack DeVries and Cole Turner. They both got out the field this weekend as well. I think it was Turner's MLS debut. DeVries has gotten a couple minutes. So they have, I think what it comes down to is you have to create the pipeline if you're the Union. And if that means taking a little bit of a haircut on the upfront in order to get that pipeline created, in order to get a better sell-on fee, because as much proof as we have now that MLS, you can go from MLS to the top leagues and the top teams in Europe, RB Salzburg has 100 times more. So, if you sell Aronson for $3.5 million plus a 25% sell-on fee, that could end up being an extra $5 million 24 months from now. So I agree with you. I hope it happens this winter for Aronson. I think that, playing for Jesse Marsh in Salzburg would be great. From everything I'm hearing, we could have news on that as soon as this week.
That's a little end of the conversation tease, huh?
Make sure you follow our guy Tom Bogart, Tommy Scoops on Twitter. He'll be able to break it.
I mean, Tutoramen, again, the master of Twitter, had sort of the tiers, and he had basically players 3 million plus. That's the highest end for MLS. 1 to 3 million, then basically in trades. My opinion is that you should be trying to sell as many players in that 1 to 3 million span as you possibly can, and perhaps early on, so that 5 years from now, there's a lot more 3 million plus players, because the market isn't just going to give you money because you think a kid is good or you think they deserve it, or you're like, well, look at Alphonso Davies or look at Tyler Adams. If I'm on the other side of that market, I'm saying, well, you're talking to me about outliers. You're talking to me about guys that are elite for one reason or another that doesn't match, but you need mass from MLS to establish a market. So, that's my long answer of saying, please sell more players. And also, like FC Dallas, be prepared to have Brian Reynolds walk in behind and do the same thing. You can't just sell. You have to seed the pipeline behind that so that you don't have one gush of oil and then nothing.
Can I throw my thing in at the end, which is completely off of what you said and less exciting and sexy? But I saw Matt Real played really well this weekend. I've really enjoyed watching Felipe Hernandez for SKC. Those are two players I've watched for years. That I think for fans, it should be exciting, the idea that those guys are not national team players, but they're going to be good MLS players, and those should be academy players. I've been saying this forever. That next step of the guys who bounce around, the Sam Cronins, the Damo Duros, the guys who are good MLS players, and every team needs them, should be coming through your academy. And you look at a Philly team, I think Anthony Fontana is in that same category. I've seen him play for a number of years. I've seen some great moments from him. I've seen some consistent performances. He's not the next Brendan Aronson. But you need 23 guys on your roster, and you need players who can play different roles and know your system. And that's the other part that can be exciting about this, is you can look at games. I look at the Griffin Yao goal. He runs to the corner, and he's hugging, and it's three homegrowns for DC United. And that's the other part of this, is not just that there can be national team players coming out of it, is that there can be high-level MLS players consistently for teams, being out of academies, having an identity, knowing the area, being connected to the fans, knowing the club and the culture. And that's something that's going to be brand new, just because we didn't have the numbers before. And all of a sudden, that's starting to flow through. And that's what you're seeing with all these heavy numbers. You know, what Tutoramen and Shiretta are talking about. Not all these guys are national team players, but they're showing at 18 and 19 that they can be consistent MLS performers.
Can we also say that everybody needs a Paul Areola in their life? Griffin Yao scores this goal, and Paul Areola is the most jacked up. He, like, in the entire Eastern Seaboard, the man was just, he was beside himself with happiness. And also, DC United still a little salty about everything that went on with Toronto. Anyway, there's a great trio there playing right now. Kevin Paredes getting a lot of time in the midfield for Ben Olsen. Moses Nyman starting to come in, and Griffin Yao getting his chances too. Ben said that last year, Griffin
and Donovan Pines.
Donovan Pines. But he had been in. He had been getting his opportunities.
1 year.
But this is the sign that I like. Ben Olsen saying last year, Griffin Yao was a quote-unquote static player. they didn't really change his game much. He was, and Griffin said, yeah, look, I was just trying to get used to things. And Ben's saying this year, he's seen big jumps forward in that progress. And that's what you want to see, right? That level up. That's enough on the youth. We could do the whole show. We could go through the entire, whatever it is, 57 and a half US, 8.5 Canadian, and just wax poetic about all of them. But if you'd like to hit us up and request players for us to talk about, feel free to do so in the mailbag. More, let's talk about those trades.
Real quick for Canada. Okay. I think you got to be excited about Dane St. Clair. And I know Doyle was tweeting about this.
And Hassall,
Richie Larea, ability to play at both fullback spots is huge for them. And Alistair Johnson has been very good for Nashville, whether it's at right back or right midfield. What?
Not this weekend.
Yeah, fair. But he's been a consistent player. That's another nice piece for them. Sure. For a team that had me at fullback, potentially, at last year at the Gold Cup.
What do you think about the Kai Kamara trade, Kalen? $150K in allocation money and a second-round draft pick in 2022. Colorado, I think, basically saying we don't think
basically Hassani Dotson and $150K. So.
Nice. Where was Chase Gasper taken? I think he's a first rounder. So this, I'll remove that one. 2-2 draw, Houston Dynamo in Minnesota. Quintero had a good game. He missed a PK. Dane St. Clair, that was his big moment of this match. Then had a nice chip later on. But they split the points. But the big news was Kai Kamara. That seems like a low price, but I'm 99.9% sure this was it in Colorado for him. I think he signed that 2-year deal, and this would have been the end of it. They were kind of phasing him out. You talked about Diego Rubio, Andre Shinashiki. They want to be young. Kai Kamara is young at heart. He's young at heart, but he's not young in age. So now he goes to Minnesota where they needed numbers. So said Adrian Heath. Is this the right move for them? As we said, chase trophies?
I think it's a fantastic move for Minnesota. I think this vaults them up as far as being a legitimate contender. And I know that they would probably say otherwise, that they were there already and they were close. But I really think that this could take them to the next level. As when you look at their style of play, when you look at their personnel, I know they have some injuries right now, but you get Ethan Finley back. You know exactly how he connects with Kai Kamara, Metinier on that right-hand side. You look at just kind of how much Kai has always taken the attention and then what that could create for Molina, who's been fantastic this season throughout. And I think their style of play, the way Adrian wants his strikers to play, the type of strikers that he likes in general, Kai fits that mold quite well. I think this is a fantastic move for Kai. I think for Colorado, I could see why they're sort of building. I really like Shinyashiki as a player, and they want to try and play a different style of play. And so I think this could be a win for both sides.
I think 8 teams, that's Kai Kamara's count. Mm-hmm. And I believe Dom Oduro is 8 as well. I think James Riley and maybe Nathan Sturgis at 7 teams all time. So file that away for your extra time trivia.
I just watched the documentary last night on Netflix on Anelka, by the way. But yeah, it's another player, a striker who's moved all over and scored goals pretty much everywhere he's been. But Kai's, I think he knows how to do this, right? He knows how to shift and make a move. And I would assume it won't take him long to work his way into the team. I feel for Charlie Davies a little bit because I feel like this is a little bit of a knock. And now Mason Toy drops down a little bit as far as his playing time. But I think maybe it'll be good for him in the long run. I don't know.
I've got a crying baby here. So if somebody wants to chime in on the Jordy Reyna.
Wyatt not happy about this time. Wyatt's
like, look, I saw the road trip that the Kamaras were on to Minnesota. That seems like hell to me. I need to be held and or fed every 2 hours. So. Not for me. The other trade that went down, Jordy Reyna to DC for $400K allocation, which seemed high to me.
Highway robbery, man. Yeah, well done.
Seemed
front office.
That seemed like a bit much, but we'll see how that works out, I guess, for DC. Classic DC move, though.
Classic. It is a very classic DC. Here's a guy who's like kind of proven in MLS. We'll just like get all of those together. They already traded for Felipe from Vancouver. At the same time, DC has been pretty tough to watch, and he is a decent attacking player in this league, the like 5 times he has a good game every 2 years. So DC got that in the books.
How about this? You guys have any other guys out there that you're looking at saying, oh, he could be moved? I don't think anybody was thinking Kai Kamara could be moved, but it was logical in the end based on contract, based on where the Rapids want to go. Jordy Reyna, that one's fairly logical. Lee Wynn to the Revs, again, logical, wasn't getting playing time, probably had a you know, the money. Miami's like, yeah, we'll move him on. Anybody out there, as you look through depth charts, as you think about what's happening, that should be or could be on the block? We keep hearing about Tim Parker with the Red Bulls, maybe a guy for the Galaxy, maybe a guy for LAFC, should they want to upgrade? Is there anybody out there that jumps out to any of you?
I don't know how much interest there would be in Daniel Chaloy these days, but you know, he's a guy who had, what, a dozen goals 2 years ago, and he doesn't even factor for Sporting KC anymore. So I could see a team that's maybe in a little bit of a rebuilding phase and saying, okay, let's take a flyer on this kid, while at the same time, you know, Sporting Kansas City needs some help. So if there's a team that has a defender to trade, or maybe just international spot or something, Shallow, I could make some sense.
I was going to say, and I don't know how much this fits into what you're saying, but I think Kamal Miller, he got a start this weekend at left back, but he hasn't gotten minutes this year in Orlando like I expected. You've got three Canadian teams that need center backs. You've got a team on the top of the Western Conference that needs good center backs. Basically every team in MLS.
Yeah,
and I think he can start in this league at that position, especially if you play three in the back. So that would be one. Orlando's got a decent amount of depth now. They have a few pieces where you could maybe get in and say, hey, if this guy thinks he's a starter, like, we'll give him that opportunity and we can make it worth your while. And I think there's a few teams now in MLS. Before Blanco got hurt, I thought Christian Paredes was going to be one of those players. Whereas, like, anyone who needs a D-mid, this is a guy who's not starting anymore. Now, obviously, he's more influential for that team, but there's a few of those guys that seem to be available.
All right, what is
anything? Oh, and you Steven got Betashore signed with Colorado.
Yeah, Steven Betashore signed with Colorado. Yeah, that was pretty incredible that he had not been signed for the amount of time that he hadn't, but now he's depth in Colorado for the Rapids. Let's really quickly talk about Jesse's artists. Let's do it. I've been having this on the rundown for a long time. We always skip out on it. That backheel goal, his form, the assist.
Wait, can I teach you something random right now?
Yeah, go for it.
There is a famous Algerian player named Rabah Mustafa Majher, and he scored a Champions League winning goal against FC Porto, that exact goal, and there are people in the world who call it a Majher. And I played youth soccer with his son. That's the only reason I know that. He was also the Algeria coach who said Zidane was too slow.
Wow. Ooh. There's a lot to unpack there. And
the Giassi Zardes Majher goal.
You're saying he was a very bad coach.
apparently, Zidane didn't ever actually try out. It was just a conversation someone had somewhere. But yeah, he is that coach. But he got them to a World Cup.
But Giassi, 75 like goals now. 75 goals in Major League Soccer for Giassi's artist. A 2-0 win for Columbus. They're atop the East. They're atop the Supporters' Shield standings. He is 29, just turned it, Giassi's artist. Happy 75 birthday. Goals is a good bit behind, say, Wando and even Kai Kamara, of course, Landon Donovan, etc. Plot his career ahead, and I'm going to let you start this one off, Kalen. Plot his career ahead in your mind. Where does Giassi Zardes end up in goals in Major League Soccer?
Ooh, I'm looking at this list right now, or I'm trying to find
Here's it. Here's his last 3 years. 19, since he got to the Crew. In 2017, the man was a right back for the Galaxy. Think about, mull that over again, and think about that for a long, hard second, because that was questionable. As it turns out, 19 goals in 18 for the Crew, 13 last year for the Crew in 28 games, 9 goals in 12 starts, or 11 starts, I should say, 12 games this year for the Crew at 75. Can he double this up? Or is out of reach?
Double like to 150?
Yeah, could he go 150? Let's say he averages 15 for the next 6 years. Is that within the realm of possibility to you? Kai Kamara's doing something like that. Chris Wondolowski. Did something like that?
A lot of it comes down to fitness, right? And Giassi hasn't had a lot of major injuries or anything that I know of. And I think also the way we've seen guys who've been able to rack up goals, whether it's Wando or others, has been around movement in the box, quality in the box, and experience. And he's got all that. So that bodes really well for him. You look at where he's playing, Columbus. I feel like that's a pretty good market, similar to San Jose, in the sense that you get the sense that they're not going to go out necessarily, even if you do have an older Giassi some years on, that they're going to go necessarily try and go out into the market and replace him with some big splashy name signing. So that also bodes well for him. And then you have to think about his national team. And that's one thing that hasn't really factored in when you look at this list now, is a lot of the guys who are inching closer to the top are not necessarily tons of, except Landon Donovan, of course, but Cunningham, Wando, Kai Kamara, even Ante, Bradley Wright Phillips. I mean, these are guys that haven't always played many minutes in massive tournaments and added that extra load to their careers. I do think that Jossie will have more of a bigger role with the national team, and that is something that might take away to some degree of his ability to get to that top end mark. I would guess, if I had to guess, I would guess that he would land somewhere in between that Bradley Wright Phillips, Ante Razov, 112, 114, and Kai Kamara, where he's at 129 right now, or maybe even a little bit higher. It's hard to keep track, but I think he is probably going to land somewhere in that middle ground of, like, I would say 5 to 7, 8 Jason Price territory, which is pretty amazing if you think about it. But I think he's got a lot of goals in him. It's just I don't know if he's going to end up getting to that very, very top tier.
Let me do the math here. 75 goals right now. Let's give him 8 the rest of the way.
But so they didn't put Kai at right back ever. So you got to count that.
That's fair. I'm not sure Kai would have accepted that.
I feel comfortable saying he'll score 50 more MLS goals in his career. 5-0. Mm-hmm. I feel safe saying that. I think, one, he's shown since he's played durability. I agree with what Kalen's saying about the national team thing, although it seems like he'll be involved more going forward. But I think the other part of that is he's not going to leave MLS at this point. That's the other piece of this. He'll be here. The few things that stand out is, one, everyone knows how good of a locker room guy he is. So if it doesn't continue working in Columbus, he will be sought after in MLS. And I especially think of the amount of expansion teams coming in over years. He's a proven MLS goal scorer. He's a guy who does his job. He now has sign off from Greg Berhalter and Caleb Porter, because Berhalter is the one who brought him in. And Berhalter's got his coaching tree growing, and he's part of a large coaching tree. Josh Wolf, if he needs a goal scorer in a year or whatever in Austin, is that an option? And now Caleb Porter, who we've seen with Nagby, one, if Caleb Porter gets a different job, he's taking Jossie with him because he's one of his dudes now at this point. But I look at Jossie and you think for the next 4 to 5 years, he's going to score double-digit goals, and he is going to be sought after if he chooses to continue to play in this league. And if it's not for an LAFC, look at the move DC made and what we just said about it. Look at what Nashville's done in trying to build their team up year one. Now you've got St. Louis coming in, Sacramento, and all these teams. There's going to be spots for a guy like Jossie to land, and he will score goals when he gets the opportunities. At this point, that's proven.
Here's the math. I give him 8 goals this year, so he gets up to 83. So he's in a good spot there. 5 more years to get to 150, he would have to score 13.5 goals per season. That is difficult, I would argue, through those age ranges, but I think doable. So there's an outside shot that he could be in a place where you would talk about maybe him being within shouting range of Chris Wondolowski, which makes what Chris Wondolowski's done insane, like just crazy. And I'm betting on Chris Wondolowski to be back next year, because I don't think he wants this roller coaster of beatdowns to be his final contribution to the Earthquakes. And plus, it's just been weird with COVID and everything else. Doyle, give me a number and then we'll move on. Just give me just whatever number pops into your mind for Jossie Zardes.
I can't just give a short answer like that. I just want to say I remember having this exact conversation on ETR in early 2013 about Kenny Cooper. Kenny Cooper was 27 years old. He had just scored 18 goals. It was his third double-digit goal scoring season of his career. It was the second time he had scored 18 goals in a season. He was at that point, he was at 66 goals in his career. And the question was, who is a lock to break 100 career goals? And we all agreed Kenny Cooper was it. He scored 6 goals the following season and 3 goals after that. He only scored 9 more goals in his career. So this is a dangerous game. Jossie's been more consistent over the course of the last 3 years than Kenny Cooper was. He's also been more durable than Kenny Cooper was. He is also He's also a true number nine. Kenny Cooper was
that. I think that's the difference.
He has a very clear role that any coach who acquires him will always play him
in. He's really, really good at
it. No, he's not Will Bruin.
He's not Will Bruin. I mean, Will Bruin got 75 career goals.
I know. I just had to throw
Kalen's holding it down.
Wait a minute. Careful here.
I
think the version of the
alarm going off right now. So that's the. That's the Will Bruin.
Do you need to leave the space you're in right now for health purposes?
You guys continue the conversation. Check. I'll be right back.
Yeah. You might want to mute your microphone.
There you go.
Oh, man.
Wow.
So, Doyle, what's your final answer on this, on Giassi?
I'll set the over-under at 110 career goals. I would probably take the over, but I'm not like it would. It shouldn't shock anybody if a guy hits 30, 31 years old and just falls off. We've seen it a million times. The reason we talk about Wando and Kai so much is because what Wando and Kai have done into their mid-30s is exceptional. That is the exception. It's not the rule. Maybe Jossie will join them, but it feels foolish to bet on that.
But isn't goal scoring a repeatable action that fits sort of that aging ability?
For sure it does. But at the same time, you need that ability to create separation. And if you look at Jossie's goals this year, he's so good at using that burst, at using that strength to create that type of separation. And it all comes from this really wonderful and often sophisticated Columbus pattern play. And he's always been good at that. But, you know, if you lose a step, if the, you know, Zellerion gets hurt and misses a year and a half, if there are, you know, if
Zellerion's already hurt.
Yeah. So it's like Jossie Zardes has been the MVP this year. He's playing the best soccer of his life. It would be foolish to bet against him, but what Wando and Kai are doing is unprecedented. You can't expect even the best goal scorer in the league right now, all due respect to Diego Rossi, you can't expect someone to just like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to be the next one to do exactly that.
So it turns out bacon, if left on the pan for too long,
Bock on.
can set off all your fire alarms.
Wait, did Jossie play? He was at Northridge, right? Is that D2? That's D1, right?
Yeah. No, okay. He was at Cal State Bakersfield, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, Cal State.
Yeah. You get to go to Cal State. I mean, you look at the Cal State crew.
Yeah,
I mean,
Dominguez
Hill,
Chico
State. There might be something in the water. I don't know.
Boy. Oh, want to score goals.
What a waste.
He's got a shot at this one, Santa Barbara, but unfortunately got injured too much. It was Bakersfield for Giassi. You mentioned MVP here. Real quick, Chris Mueller. 4-1 win for Orlando. They are fun and good. The Fire are less fun and bad.
We have an email from Daniel Cluley who says Chris Mueller has the best goals per 90 in MLS right now. He's just above Diego Valeri.
And producer Anders asks, should Chris Mueller be in the MVP discussion?
Let's take the first or the second part of that first. Yes, he should be in the MVP discussion. He's got 7 goals and 5 assists. He has added to his game in the way that Jordan Morris did last year, as like really embracing being a winger, but also he has good feet and playmaking instincts. So he comes inside and he works in those half spaces, especially when Nani stretches out on the left and drags teams over. Like Orlando are really, really good at then playing across the game channel and getting the ball to Mueller in places where he could do damage. You saw it on the first goal against Chicago this weekend. But he's a playmaker. You saw him pick his head up and get the ball, you know, put that cross right on Nani's head. He has been excellent. He does not have the highest goals per 90.
No, it's goals assist. So goals combined.
Per 90. Okay, I mean, yeah, I haven't done the math on that, but he's been, I mean, he has 12 combined goals and assists in 830 minutes for one of the best teams in the league. That is pretty, pretty great. And like, I was a Chris Mueller fan. I did not think Chris Mueller would be as good as he has been this year. Like, he has made a jump to the point where, yeah, he's in the MVP discussion.
But you didn't mention him in your national team.
What's that?
You didn't mention him in your national team.
I did not. I would love to see Chris Mueller get a January camp. I'm not going to immediately slot him into the national team.
But what a problem to have. To have guys that are performing like that and saying, well, hey, not quite. There's no room for you yet, young man. We'll see. Benji Michel, shout out to him. Good game for him as well. Can I just ask you, though, Kalen? This occurs to me as I'm watching Berich and Madron fight over a PK for the Fire. Madron won this argument, but it was a long, contentious argument where Berich wouldn't even get out of the way for him. You know, Francisco Calvo had to come in and be like, hey, just move it on. Let the man take a PK, which he then got saved. Why would you not have your PK taker set, Rafael Wicki? And he said after the thing, it was my fault. I didn't assign a player who takes the penalty. But what happened after, that's not acceptable. Well, then that's why you make the rule, no? Like, have you been on a team where it was open season, where anybody who could grab the ball and walk to the penalty spot could convince somebody else in a time of argument that they should be the one that takes a PK? I mean, it just doesn't. It's like all of us coming in here and being like, who's the host today? I have no idea. Let's all just yell over each other, which is, I guess, what we sometimes do anyway, and certainly when the bacon sets off the fire alarm.
Are you the host? Are you the host of this
thing? I guess. I'm rambling right now because I don't get it, Rafael Wicki. Like, why don't you have this set?
Yeah, no, you need to set up some kind of guardrails to protect your team from having this happen to you. And he came out and said that. But yeah, I mean, that's a just sort of pretty basics. It's just putting down who takes the set pieces, what are their defensive assignments, where are your markers, and if we get a penalty, here's 1, 2, 3. This is by this order. So if this guy's off the pitch, he comes off, generally doesn't, but if he does, you know, it's the second guy who comes on. If things change by any during any of the substitutions, that information is also relayed onto the field, usually by the assistant coaches who handle a lot of that.
But Kalen, we've seen players say, come on, I want this. We've seen players earn PKs and say, let me take it. It's not always that guy.
No, absolutely. But there needs to be some type of hierarchy from the coaching staff to be able to say, this is the way it goes. You always, like, we would have Brad Davis and Chingy, right? And so it was like, it was... Well, I don't know. Actually, it depends on the year. But it's generally, I would say, because Ching wasn't starting at the end and it was Brad's, right? And it was all, I mean, Brad wasn't giving that one up. But if there was a moment where somebody says, hey, look, I really want this one. I remember, Colin Clark one time stepped up and said he wanted to take one late on in the game, I think against Salt Lake. And
were you winning?
No. It was
interesting.
It was in extra time, actually.
Wow.
And he wanted it, and he stepped up and took it and scored, and we won the game. And so there's always like some type of, there can be some type of flexibility where it's like, are you feeling it? If somebody really steps up and wants it. But ultimately, even in that moment, like there's, you either look at the sideline and it's like, no, it's this guy. You point to that guy and it's over. That's the end of discussion. And you try and set that up ahead of time so you don't have to deal with any of the stuff. And it still will happen. But at least you create some type of, that's what I was saying, guardrails to say, this is our guy. We believe in you. You're stepping up to take it. If it's not you, it's you. If it's not you, that's number three. That's it. And it's just easy.
And especially like watching this back and like watching the replays and going and checking out the context of it. They're down 2-0. So one, if you take, you gotta score that goal. Two, yes. They're a struggling team. So it's already, I have to imagine, a little bit weird and contentious in the locker room because it's a bunch of new guys and they're not delivering right now on maybe the promise that they thought they had.
Also, I think is what you saw in the moment was there is not a leader.
Yeah.
So often you do see arguments and the captain's like, he's taking it. Calvo tried, but it's Francisco Calvo.
Yeah. I mean, to me, like I'm sorry, but your 9 takes, like, and I think that's what Berich is probably saying. I assumed in the moment, before I saw Wiki's comments, that it was Berich's, he had the responsibility. He was given that, because otherwise, what's he doing standing there for like 5 minutes, basically trying to cajole and yell at Alvaro Madron to give him the ball?
Well, he's a center forward. He would push his own mother into chain checks to get his goals. That's what
the you should be pushing people out of the way to get him goals. If you're on the, if you're a player on that team, you want your number 9 to get, to get goals and to continue to supply him. So if anything, look, if he misses a couple, I could see you changing it. But
by the way, he got the second one in this game and bagged it.
On the first one, he finally walks away, yeah. And you can see he turns and he's interacting with the bench. And then Madron has it saved and he doesn't move.
He turns
and looks back at the bench.
Yes. That's why I assumed it was his. And Madron had said, I want this, and then wouldn't give it up. Anyway.
The man did a shot of Malort when he got to Chicago. Okay, so that's...
I'm taking the pens. There you go. Smash it down.
He's earned it. And it, like, obviously, we're talking about the penalty discussion for good reasons, because it was a spectacle. But like, the Fire played well. The Fire earned two penalties. They had a set piece goal called back.
Bunch from of VAR.
Fractional offside. They hit the post twice.
It's clear offside.
Callese made a spectacular save on Gaston Jimenez. The Fire, over the past 180 minutes, have played really, really good soccer and have repeatedly shot themselves in the foot against two of the best teams in the league, Columbus and Orlando City. If they play like this against almost any other team in the league, they're going to start winning games. But it's a real test for Rafael Vicky this week to make sure that they're all on the same page, to make sure that the disappointment of this result, which was really close, it was a nail biter until the last 10 minutes when Orlando City were able to blow it open. This can be a springboard for something better, because the Fire have actually started to put together really impressive sequences, like patterns of play. They have Mihailovic drifting out to the left side. They have the guy underlapping, like, and it works. But they can't let this, be the end.
Rays of sunshine through the dark storm clouds that were that argument for them. Let's go rapid fire, then quickly get to the mailbag. So here it is. San Jose get blasted again. It seems like their springboard is like reverse. They're just going deeper into the ground, just driving themselves deeper and deeper. 6-1. Portland Timbers just run them over. And Mateus Almeida, as I said, did not go to the postgame presser. GM Jesse Fiorinelli did and said, quote, Almeida wasn't there because he had a terrible headache. That's not great optics. I mean, if you had a bad headache, you know what? I'm not going to judge anybody based on sort of physical ailment things. That doesn't feel great. We have an email here from Andrew in Springville, California. Not me. I've never been to Springville. Don't even know where that is. Hot take, guys. I guarantee this is Almeida's last season in MLS. This San Jose Chivas B experiment didn't work, and ownership is tired of spending money to lose. What do you think about that?
It's a strong take, but it's hard to really argue. They've conceded 13 goals in two games over the course of last week. Obviously, they had the Portland game in between where they got a draw.
That's feast or famine, man. It's either like it's 1-1, 0-0, and they just try to lock it down, or they just get destroyed.
Yeah, I don't think there's any feast in any of that. I think it's all famine. Yeah,
I guess that's
some
true.
Of it's better and that's some of it's worse.
Sometimes they fill their bellies.
He's moved pieces around, and we've talked about it on this show. If the system is the issue, it doesn't matter where Judson's specifically lining up when you start the game. If Jordan Morris can dribble 65 yards untouched through the middle of your team. And this Portland game was a bit more spaced out, a few set piece goals. It wasn't like they had five dunked on them in 18 minutes. But again, this is a Portland team with Mel Blanco that you just held to one goal. And then you come into this game and you can't find your feet defensively on any level.
Well, the disappointing part was the lack of reaction at the end. And it was how it goes from 4-5 and 5-6, where they get a set piece where Valeri hits a nice ball in, you give one up, it goes to 5, and then within 1 minute they come right down and get a turnover, they jam you, then it's just a nice little passing sequence. But the wheels start to feel like they're falling off. Where you see that's the disappointment, I would imagine, sitting in that locker room, or if you're a fan or whatever, is sitting there to be like, man, like, at what point do you just say, all right, this is out of control, we're not going to win this game, it's 4-1. But continually, I've seen them show no flexibility to change their style of play. And we looked at this last year, and it went from, we're playing on the road in Colorado in altitude, let's go ahead and high press. We're playing against Carlos Vela. They are man for man better than us, but let's go man to man. And we've talked to players on the team. They appreciate that belief and that commitment to a philosophy. It's crazy to me. I don't understand it. I mean, I've said this time and time again. It's a drill that you do in training, right? Where it's like a fitness drill where everybody goes man on man and you go up and down the pitch. But you know what happens? You get a lot of breakaways. That's how the drill works. Because if you have dynamic movement, you play 1-2s, you get around it. it's pretty easy to set up the second team to be able to play that man-on-man system, and you start to figure out exactly the way you can work to beat it. But that's the system part. The problem that I as well is just the lack of flexibility to change things or to move away from it, even in within a match when you are leaking goals and it's going from bad to worse. Yeah. And that's where things start to say, all right, when will this change or will this change at all?
Yeah. It's supposed to be the family and the fight, and that was like what they're selling. But when they said a lay down, you have to wonder if that part's there as well. I don't know. Look, Atlanta's in a tough spot. They have the second worst record since returning back to market. San Jose has the worst, by the way. Just one win for Atlanta United. They lost to Inter Miami, and they lost on goals by Breck Shea and Wong Agudelo, which has to hurt them a little bit too. It's just this is not the same as it was. Yeah, get that left hand up for Breck. Olympico sinks the Red Bulls, who are having a tough one too. Harris Madunyanin of FC Cincinnati with the Olympico 1-0 win for Cincy.
They have the fourth worst record. What was the David Jensen signing? You had Ryan Mirror waiting for like 5 years. You went out of your way. Every expansion draft, they protected him and lost players that they liked. And they didn't trade him. And they didn't send him on loans. And then he finally is ready to be the starter. And you just go out and sign a random European. Like, I can understand.
Are you putting the Olympico on him?
Yeah, 100%.
Oh,
he steps forward into a group of people for no reason. Why is Madunyanin going for it?
I mean,
because he sees the back post wide open. Cincinnati stacked everyone on the near post, and Jensen is right there because he's worried about fighting through them. And then Madunyanin kisses it off the back post.
That's a freak play to me. I don't know.
Something about Red Bull Arena, baby. Right, maybe from the same spot as Thierry. I don't know. Four teams in the West have 15 points. Which are they?
The LA teams, Vancouver, and Houston.
Yeah, that might surprise some people out there. Vancouver the win. Lucas Cavallini scores a goal, his second in Major League Soccer. Well done. RSL lose. FC Dallas, maybe we end here, Dave, in the mailbags. I know we got some back and forth. FC Dallas beat Sporting Kansas City 3-2. Graham Zusi had a very regrettable back pass in like the 86th minute that basically set up the winner for Ryan Hollingshead.
You get any texts from your brother after that one?
Yeah, couple. Wasn't too happy about that decision from Graham. He said, this is what I'm talking about. Big win for Dallas, but afterwards, Peter Vermees, and during the match, Peter Vermees quite unhappy with what he called time-wasting antics. I won't go read you the quotes, but basically he was saying, nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to watch that on TV. That's terrible for the game. I can't believe FC Dallas did this. This is an FC Dallas team that were down a man for about 15 minutes. It also got four yellow cards for time wasting. Take it away. Start us with a position here. Is it the Sporting KC position or is it the Dallas position, Dave? And how do they respond?
With Adam from the Cauldron, who says, obviously I'm an SKC supporter, so I might seem just slightly biased, maybe. I want to talk about the end of the match against Dallas this week. I know every team wastes a little time at the end of a game to earn a result. The way FC Dallas was going about this was next level. As a fan of the sport, I found this embarrassing. Players waiting until the ref blows his whistle to take a free kick, then rolling the ball 10 yards or taking off a shoe to tie it beyond excess. The referee didn't do nearly enough to take control of this game. He should not have allowed the Dallas players to take over in this way. I could go on for hours about this.
I could tell.
I will keep it short.
So there you go. Did he keep well? And there was more email, so I'm not sure that that was that short. What does the Dallas side say about that?
Zach says, Peter Vermees' comments are laughable in light of the history between these two teams. SKC are equally skilled at this dark art and have used it to screen cursing effect against the fans of opponent teams. Be frustrated. You gave the game away and move on. Oh, and don't come at Lucci. Don't ever come at Lucci.
Mm. Oh, the ad is it's an attractive, unattractive cauldron kettle situation. So he's saying that a certain cauldron is calling the kettle black. That's it from us. Big weekend MLS, big weekend for young players, American and Canadian. Let us know what you're thinking about. We'll talk about it on Thursday with Charlie Davies, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Guys, thanks for your time. See you on the backside.